incredible run by the Nigerian Nightmare. Oh, hit it shot. Oh, baby, what a play.
This is Jeff Vidotin with Believe in Chiefs on the Believe Network, Kansas City's number one sports podcast network, the only place with a show for every team in KC and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? On this week's show, former Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman Joe Valerio and I break down the Chiefs' impressive win against the 49ers. Joe, I was at the 49ers-Chiefs game, and it was alumni weekend for the 49ers, so the other Joe and Jen were there, Joe and Jen Montana.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that picture. It was nice to see the other Joe and Jennifer. That was really nice of you to share that. But no, it, seriously, though, it looked like a lot of fun. That was so cool. Must be a big game for him. And what a cool alumni weekend for Joe. You know, this 49ers Chiefs rivalry, right? You had the Super Bowl a couple years ago, and then you had this game. So really cool for him. And now it was kind of like on his turf, right? Which was cool. Which was awesome to see. But yeah, it's been a, you know, it's obviously the red and the gold action. It just must have made for a really nice trip, Jeff. Tell our listeners how the trip was.
Yeah, it was very cool. And like you said, a weekend for Joe Montana to come back and made sense, not only because the Chiefs 49ers connection, but it was alumni weekend. They were honoring the 2012 Super Bowl team that Jim Harbaugh coached. So he was back there, and it was really fun to see the interaction between Harbaugh and Montana. They were like asking about each other's kids, and Montana was telling this recruiting story how that Harbaugh tried to recruit one of Joe's kids to Stanford. And so he went over to Montana's house, and he had a football, and Harbaugh was like, "Joe, can you grab the football for me? Just, I want to see your grip." And Joe's like, "I'm good." He's like, "No," Jim wouldn't let up. He's like, no, I want to see how you grip it. And Joe's like, "Who cares, man?" But like, I think Harbaugh is so like, you know, "Joe Montana, I got to see how this other quarterback grips it." So anyhow, so it was the 49ers had all this going on. It was alumni weekend. It was a Super Bowl 54 rematch. They were coming off a loss. They just traded for CMC. And Joe, the Chiefs just crushed them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the second half. Yeah,
It was a game in the first half. And it really even in the third quarter, but still.
Yeah, it's a two-half, four-quarter game. I get it. And they won, and they won handily. But that was, you know, that first half was interesting, and it just kind of played right into the things that you and I've been talking about for a really long time about this team. And I know I still have yet to do the analysis of it, but my gut always tells me that if I were to go back and look at data for every game that the Chiefs have played over the course of the last several years, especially in the Patrick Mahomes era, that the third quarter is their quarter. Like it takes this team time to get going. And I talked about that, you know, on the Border Patrol today, you know, when we recorded on air there about how, you know, this team takes Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid a moment to get things going, right? To learn how to counterpunch. We use the boxing analogy for, you know, to kind of counterpunch what the other team is doing and what they're putting out there, especially on offense, right? It just seems like it takes this team a long time, some games, to get the rhythm going of how they want the offense to operate against what the defense is giving them. And it seemed like a very typical, you know, it seemed very typical in this 49ers game that that's what was happening, that, you know, Eric Bieniemy and Andy were trying to figure it out. Patrick was trying to figure it out. And then, of course, once this offense clicks, it just becomes a fine-tuned machine. And, you know, you can't stop them. I mean, they were basically unstoppable from, you know, almost halfway through the third quarter through the rest of the game. They were unstoppable. I don't think, you know, San Francisco is the best, you know, one of the best defenses, if not the best defense statistically in the league.
Like they entered as number one. They're not number one anymore after that.
Yeah.
They entered number one.
So that, you know, that just took the Chiefs a little while to figure it out and get going, which, you know, which is great. It still causes me pause sometimes when I think about that, because I, you know, you want them to put the pedal to the metal and just get revving sooner so that they don't let teams hang around, because, you know, that's what you don't want to do against teams that are maybe a little bit better than the 49ers offensively, right? You could
And
see
this one, Joe, you talked about the third quarter burst. This one, like we talked about the Raiders, they were down 10-0, even 17-0. I'm like, it's the Raiders. Like the Chiefs will find a way, and the Raiders will find a way to screw this up. This one, they're down 10-0. I mentioned all the 49ers had going for them this weekend. I thought they were in real trouble. I mean, I thought it did not look good. This is the one it's the third 10-point deficit they've faced in a game this year, and they won each of those games against the Chargers, the Raiders, and the 49ers, and shows what this team, how they're such a comeback team. Joe, you make such a good point of them being really getting hot later in the game, not early in the game. That's been like a trend. Part of my theory, Joe, is I think that defenses throw so much junk at the Chiefs that it takes them a little bit to adjust. And Andy Reid and Mahomes are so smart, they eventually do, but I think it takes them a little bit. And tell our listeners what Patrick Mahomes said after the game, the 49ers threw at him, is they were playing a cover four defense. And he said that took him a little time to adjust. Tell the listeners what that means, that cover four.
Yeah, I mean, cover four is you know, really you're getting your players spread out, right, so to speak, you know, as much as you can, right? So you're trying to go four deep, right? So you're bringing your corners back, right? And you've got your two safeties, you know, so you're in a, if you were in a typical, you know, 4-3 defense, right? Picture that with an outside linebacker, a Mike linebacker, and a Will linebacker. You got your two corners and, you know, in a very traditional strong safety and a free safety. You know, in cover four, you're taking away the deep ball. I mean, you're going to rely basically on a four-man rush, because when you go cover four, it is really, really hard to blitz, because you don't have any extra players, because what you're doing, it's sometimes defensive coordinators will call it quarters coverage, right? Mm-hmm. So basically your four deep are in a pretty much a man-to-man principle, right? So picture your two corners lined up outside and your two safeties lined up in a very traditional, like if the ball was in the middle of the field, they'd be deep on the hashes, right? The two mm-hmm. hashes. So you're just like a very traditional 4-3 defense. So you've got, you know, your corners are generally going to be pressed up a little bit, right? You're not going to, because then all you would do is just throw the ball to the receivers that are out there, right? So the corners do have to press, but as soon as the ball is snapped, you know, they are basically going to sprint back, and you're going to go into basically it's, you know, they're going to stay man to man with the wide receivers that are lined up most wide. Right. And then you're going to have your safeties are going to line up. So you've got one corner lined up on a wide receiver and you've got the other corner lined up on a wide receiver. So picture those two corners out there kind of wide, and they're pretty much man to man, except they're going to take those receivers kind of deep. Right. And then you've got your safeties. Probably your strong safety is going to be lined up where the tight end is. Right. So you're going to put your bigger, stronger safety. Your strong safety, your bigger guy, you're going to put him on the tight end. You're going to put your free safety on another wide receiver that's either lined up, you know, wherever he's lined up. So so if you had one receiver to the left with a tight end and you had two receivers to the right, you'd have the safeties and the cornerbacks on them pretty much man to man. But then what you do is to sort of, I guess, get in the quarterback's vision, so to speak, is you're going to drop your two outside linebackers and your Mike linebacker, and you're going to drop them into basically what is a zone. So it's like a three under zone. So the Sam linebacker, the Mike linebacker, and the Will linebacker are going to kind of drop to what the outside linebackers would call like the hook curl zone, where you would see like a hook route, and then the Mike linebacker is going to take the middle of the field underneath, right? And then what that allows things to do is it does allow you to get sort of a bracket on your stronger receivers, right? So if you can your free and strong safety basically can double up on the on your number one wide receiver, right? That's really the goal
Which is
of
probably Kelsey in the case of the Chiefs,
in this particular case. Yeah, I mean, just with what the damage he's been able to do and how fast he is, allows him to do that. So it's a great defense if you want to, if you want to try to bracket, your number one receiver, get your four, guys, your deep guys in really solid, like a man-to-man coverage. But the weakness really is that underneath zone, right? Because now you've got linebackers, they can get pulled up by play action, right? So, and the safety can get sucked up. If you've got a strong safety who likes to play the run, he's going to get caught up in the wash sometimes on a play action, and you're going to lose that bracket that you might be able to put on your number one receiver. And generally you're only going to get to rush four guys. Very, 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 very hard to blitz. Very hard to blitz because you lose because you got your safeties in sort of this man coverage with a bracket on your top receiver and with the between the safeties and the corners. And then but what ends up happening is you lose a lot in the middle of the field, right? And I think that's where the Chiefs kind of took advantage of the 49ers, right? There wasn't a lot of huge deep balls, but it really did, it did take away from it. And then what they also did too, I think they were really worried about Bosa. And when I went back and watched a lot of the key plays in the game, they basically weren't really blocking Bosa. And I was figuring that out because when I coached high school football, we ran the option and we were a small school, but we were competing in a big division, right? We were the smallest. Big, that sounds so funny. It's an oxymoron, right? We were the smallest big school, but in the big school division, we were the smallest. We were just over the line to get us into in Pennsylvania back then, which was 4A, which is, there was 1A, 2A, 3A, and 4A, but we were the smallest 4A school. And so what we would do is, we to compete against bigger schools that had bigger guys on defense, bigger linemen, we ran the triple option. And the way that we blocked the best defensive player who might be a defensive tackle or defensive end, we would always joke, well, how are you going to block these guys? You're so much smaller than they are. We say, well, we're not going to block them. And that's what you do in the option. You option off the player. If he decides he's going to suck down and tackle the fullback on the give, right? You pull the ball as a quarterback and then you run out to the end. And if the end attacks you as the quarterback, you pitch the ball to the tailback who's flowing behind you. So that's what I think the Chiefs did. They did that with Bosa a couple of times. They didn't block him on that jet sweep. They didn't block him on the screen, the really nice screen that they had. And that's what you do against players that you might be struggling with. You don't block them. You make them make choices. And that's why the RPO is so effective, right? Because you can get a double team somewhere else. You can single up your best player. Don't try to block them. Just leave them alone and let them make a decision about what they're going to do. So that's, I think, that was what I think what the Chiefs did to combat this number one defense of theirs. Like I said, the biggest threat against, against this cover four or the threat for the defense is that, if you're going to be play actioning, you're going to put your safety in a really tough pickle because, they're going to want to play the run and they're going to want to come up and, get more players into the box to stop the run. But then you become vulnerable to the pass, especially the underneath, where the, when you flood the underneath zones, right? Because you've got the, the deep guys are in man, but then you've got, linebackers in sort of a zone. If you just flood those zones with multiple players, the outside linebacker and the middle linebacker can't cover two people at once in that kind of underneath zone. So, yeah, it was, it's look, this is the chess game that they play, that all the, defensive coordinators try to play against the Chiefs. They're just trying to throw them just anything to throw at Patrick to get him out of his game. And you just like, you can't. And that's what probably took the Chiefs a little while to read it, right? To figure out how we're going to beat this. And then, bam, look what happened once they did.
Joe, that is just outstanding analysis. And to confirm what you thought, You know, I did a story on Jerick McKinnon after the game because it's a nice story that he was a guy who actually used to play on the 49ers. He was with them, he was on the team, and he was at that Super Bowl 54, but he was injured. He had hurt his knee. He was on injured reserve that year, but he was at the game. So he had a little extra edge playing against the Niners. And one of the key plays was that the Chiefs had a 3rd and 20, and they converted it with a screen. And so I asked him what happened, and he said exactly what you said. He said it was a great play call. We used Bosa's aggressiveness against him. We knew he was going to come in hard inside, and so we popped outside, and it, he said, like broke open like the Red Sea. So Joe, you nailed it on the head there, buddy. Great job breaking the scheme.
Well, not bad. Not bad for an offensive lineman who operated in a 7-yard box for, his whole life. But, I did learn a little bit about the coverages. In my last couple of seasons in Kansas City, I was actually beginning to take a lot more tight end reps. I would actually work out, with the tight ends at practice at least once a week. Especially if there was a couple of injuries. There was a couple of games where, I actually, believe it or not, one of my starts in the NFL was at tight end. I actually started a game. We started in a two tight end set, and got onto the card as a starter, and got to be announced as a starter for that game because I was on the field for the first play. So yeah, it was really fun. And unfortunately, not to be a downer, but the injury that I received in 96, precluded me probably from really making that switch to tight end. The goal in 1996 was for me to become, the third tight end, and to actually begin to transition my number and actually start to wear, a number that was an eligible receiver. Always could go back, obviously if some couple of injuries on the offensive line and they needed somebody to come in and back up or play, on the line, I could certainly do that. It wasn't like I was going to lose those skills. But but once I got hurt early on in preseason, I took no reps in the off in the pre in the during training camp at tight end, and I just they weren't going to be able to make that switch. So anyway, long story long. I did start to pick up on coverages and be sitting in tight end meetings and work with the quarterbacks on running routes and things like that. So yeah, it was fun.
What number did you have a number in the 80s in mind that you were going to pick if you had you gotten that far?
Yeah, we really didn't get that far because they were thinking maybe because I also long snap, they were thinking maybe something in the 40s. And rather than go with the full-blown, 80s.
I was wondering if you were going to end up. That would have been so crazy if you were like, oh, like, yeah, I was going to be 87, and then Kelsey
Yeah,
ends up having or something like that. So.
exactly. That would have been, it would have been a lot of fun. And it was really fun. It was a great way to learn the game and just kind of expand my football knowledge a little bit by sitting in other rooms. 'Cause you kind of get really tied into your own position, right? Like I knew everything there's pretty much everything I could learn from having three of the best offensive line coaches the NFL has probably seen in the last, 50 years, right? Howard Mudd, who everybody knows was a legend. Art Shell, geez, one of the greatest tackles to
Hall of
ever play
Famer.
the game. And Alex Gibbs, who some call the greatest offensive line coach of the generation. So, geez, God, I really lucked out in the kind of tutelage that I got from the line coaches that I was able to be around. And so yeah, it was a lot of fun to get to expand that a little bit and pick up another position or two.
Well, basketball is back, and Bet Online remains your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and events, whether that's NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. Head to BetOnline AG to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, to receive your rewards. Bet online, where the game starts. Well, Joe, I really thought this was the most complete game the Chiefs played, the best they've played all year, and boy, did they look good. We'll break down this game a little bit more, and I and we'll also get into Frank Clark situation. He's going to be suspended 2 games for that possession of the firearm. We'll get to that. But Joe, first I wanted to ask you, well, one of the stories against this game was obviously Mecole Hardman, and he was just killing the 49ers on those jet sweeps. Why do you think that is? And tell me a little bit what it's like to block for a jet sweep when you're a lineman.
Oh, you know, it's like a dream when when you get a call like that, because what it does, Jeff, is it just stretches the defense, right? You're using the whole 50 yards of the field, sideline to sideline, right? You're not just focused on, you know, what we call, you know, the tackle box, right? Tackle to tackle, right? 7 yards, you know, 7 yards wide, you know, and then, you know, you've got 2-3 yards, you know, deep, right? This box that you have to operate within. And it's a nightmare in there because, you know, it's so tight and everything it's so mushy right in there. And then all of a sudden, you know, you got linemen, defensive linemen reacting to something going wide, and their whole demeanor changes, right? They're moving faster. They're becoming what I would call air quote weaker, right? Because they're trying to make a play wide, right? If you got a defensive lineman or defensive end that's stretching down the field, so much easier to block them than when they're just pounding you straight ahead, right? When they know the ball is going to be run either off tackle or somewhere in between. And it's just so nice to be able to stretch them out. And it just opens things up, you know, and now that, you know, Mecole seems healthy. It's so nice to be able to stretch the defense out, you know, horizontally, so to speak. We talk about that all the time in the pass game, right? Using the whole field, horizontal stretch pass routes, right? Where you're stretching the field horizontally with, you know, the receivers either flooding a zone and kind of all, you know, going over to one area and then branching out so that, you know, players, if you're in a zone, you can sit down inside the zone, or, you know, you can, if they're in man coverage, you can just run receivers off, you know, horizontally across the field. It's no different in the run game. You know, when you start running jet sweeps like that, especially off of some kind of like a, you know, with this, the fakes that they do, right? Because sometimes they fake the jet sweep and they use that as their play action. It just spreads things out. And it's so nice to get defensive players running what I would call sideways. So the next time the Chiefs run a jet sweep and you can see it coming, watch how the defensive linemen react. They're gonna play more sideways than they are straight at you. Right. And with the size and athleticism and speed of some of these defensive ends and defensive tackles these days, it's really hard to just pound the whole game, right, and to try to run it down their throat. So thank goodness they've got, you know, Mecole kind of healthy and being able to put this back in the playbook, because I know it was a big part of what they did when Tyreek was here. And so I'm so happy. If I were a lineman, I would have been jumping for joy to say, let's get this ball stretched out. And then what does it do? Jeff, then go back and look what Isaiah Pacheco and Clyde did, right? They, you know, I know they both had, you know, a couple of long runs that kind of threw their averages off a little bit or increased their average and kind of inflated it. But, you know, the fact that, you know, they had, you know, they were averaging 5.5 yards a carry, you know, between them, you know, 75 yards, so to speak, it just tells you right there. If you just went and looked at the stats, you say, wow, Mecole had 2 runs for 14 yards each, right? Average, mm-hmm. His longest was obviously 25. But just the fact that they were running those plays gave Isaiah and Clyde a chance to, you know, be more effective, right? Allows the line to be more effective because you're always thinking in your mind, is the jet sweep coming? And you know, linebackers are not filling the holes as hard. Defensive linemen aren't coming right at you. As a lineman, they're kind of thinking, all right, we might have a sweep here. So now we got to stretch this defense out. So really it just affects the whole game. And that's what football is, right? It's the variety that you have to have. The Chiefs have always had it in the pass game. They've had it in the run game when they were able to use the whole field. And I think if they can continue to do this, continually, you know, look at RPO options for Patrick, get Mecole involved in the sweeps, get out on the corner a little bit, you know, get these, because the screens don't really have the same effect. Now, they had obviously the great screen to Jerick McKinnon that got the first down. But At the same time, they basically, screens are not the same as stretching with sweeps. You got to get a heavy dose of stretching the ball to the outside to keep them from pinning their ears back and coming right at you.
Really cool stuff there. Really informative, Joe. Another storyline of this game, maybe it's his NFC West origins for Frank Clark when he started with the Seattle Seahawks. He seems to just light up when he sees the 49ers. He was so good in the Super Bowl against them. He had really kind of the game sealing sack, and he was fantastic. Two sacks, including the safety. He came on the Chiefs defense also. You mentioned the running game. Really kind of, I think Christian McCaffrey gave the stadium was really buzzing. They were applauding, going nuts every time he entered the game, and he was giving them some juice. The Chiefs, I think, kind of figured him out in the second half. And that second half again is when Frank Clark really exploded. Joe, the 2-game suspension for him, let's talk about how significant that is. Because the Chiefs, I really like where they are heading into this bye. They're pretty healthy. I mean, Trent McDuffie is out, but he's going to come back imminently. It's not, a super, it's not like a broken leg or an ACL. You look at some of the other teams in the division, like the Chargers, like the Broncos, they have major losses. We're talking JC Jackson, Rashawn Slater, Mike Williams, guys like that for maybe the year, Javonte Williams. The Chiefs are really in good shape, even with this Frank Clark thing. So, one, do you agree that the Chiefs are in pretty good shape health-wise? And tell me about how you think Frank Clark's going to impact things.
Yeah, well, my first thought when I saw the breaking news on the suspension was like, well, does the bye week count? Can we get that?
Yeah,
Does that count?
right.
It's like 2 week suspension. I'm like, yeah, the bye week counts, but obviously it's a 2 game suspension, and that's unfortunate. Yeah, certainly we're going to miss them. As you look at the schedule, I mean, there's maybe a time when it could have been a little bit better. But at the same time, Titans and Jags, coming off a bye week, we know how the Chiefs are coming off of bye weeks. They're going to have a ton of guys healthy and back for the Titans game. So maybe the timing isn't as bad as I think it is. I mean, it would have been terrible to not have him, for the Bills 49ers or the Raiders Bills or any of those two combinations, right? The Bucks Raiders, or you know what I mean? Like, if you did things in 2 game tranches and you thought, well, it would have been tough. I mean, I think that between the Titans and the Jags, it's not, look, no game is a pushover. Every team can play. But if there were 2 games that I had to bucket together to not have him, these would be the games. Number one, because, the Titans and the Jags are, I mean, Titans are playing better and their record's showing it. I think the Jags are still learning and they're still figuring it out under Doug Peterson. But coming off the bye week and playing those two teams, I just have a feeling it's going to be not as big a factor as if it would have been some other two game chunks. So he can get rested up. I think we got, Willie Gay's back, got the bye week. I think we'll be just fine. They made these moves with Karloftis and, bringing in some guys to get some depth. So hopefully.
Dunlap, yeah, he's been playing well for the Chiefs. I think he can step in there and be a starter for a couple games. And again, I really think the Chiefs, now it's a long season. We know that there are going to be injuries that come up. But as of right now, I mean, the Chiefs are really, like I said, Gay is back, McDuffie's coming back from just a hamstring injury. I think they're really in good shape when I'm looking at some of the AFC, the rest of the AFC. I mean, look at the Ravens with guys like Dobbins out. And again, I've mentioned the Chargers and the Broncos. Joe, one last nugget of when I wanted to share too. It kind of a cool thing in the locker room. And it just shows how close these guys are, and also how you have to be focused on the game, but you also have to, take, just like Joe Montana, we opened the show with him. He was always good because he mentioned, oh, look into the cheerleaders. Like, he never got too stressed out because he was such a, I guess, fun-loving guy, or kept things in perspective. And in the locker room, Chris Jones ran over to Mahomes recently, really excitedly, because he's like, "Oh man, did you see what Russell Westbrook did last night, man? Just how poor he was shooting." Like that's all he wanted to talk about. I thought that was a real cool moment between them.
Yeah, that's awesome. You got to have that, right? You got to have those moments where the world is real and things are still going on, and whether it's something fun, like a, like something like that where it's a sporting event. I'm sure, but maybe or maybe not, some of our Chiefs listeners who are baseball fans, watching like Jason Kelce, Travis's brother,
I knew we
who's
were going to get a Phillies reference.
yeah, I had to, right? The Phillies, first time since two,
I
since 2009, right?
didn't
They won the National League pennant. But Jason Kelce, who's Travis's brother, and I know there's probably a ton of fans in Kansas City that know Jason. He's an absolute hoot. The guy is a riot. He's a fan favorite here in Philly. He embodies the city. They have adopted him as one of their sons, and they just love him. He comes out, the Philly Fanatic, who's a very beloved mascot in Major League Baseball, and even there's people who aren't even baseball fans that, maybe not even Phillies fans, but they know who the Philly Fanatic is. He's just an iconic Major League sports mascot. And so Jason comes out, with his Kelce jersey on, number 62, a Phillies jersey, of course. And he comes out and he starts, hanging out and just hanging out with the Fanatic during the game and just getting the fans all riled up. And, I know he and Travis have a podcast that they do, and it's an absolute riot. These two are a hoot together. If anybody, wants to, look into that, but they've got a podcast.
Now, and it's only if you have enough time. Like you should prioritize, if you have a limited time, work is busy,
Well, you're
get
listening to
A
our
and B.
podcast
You're
first.
number one. But if
I'm
you have
sorry. I
enough
should.
time, if you've got it's a rainy day, feel free to also listen to
Yes, there you go. Good point.
the
Good point, Jeff. But Jeff, I'd be
Kelce.
remiss if I didn't say, going back to the Christian McCaffrey thing. I mean, look, with just paying respect to like how that all went down, the fact that he did what he did and the impact that he had on that game was absolutely astonishing,
Yeah.
right? That he was
Over
able to
20
go.
plays. Yeah.
I mean, he was in there, right? He had eight, he had eight carries, two receptions, right? So he actually, touched the ball 10 times, like, and did well. Like he carried the ball for 38 yards. I mean, 4.8 yards per carry. He had that 12-yard run. He had the 13-yard catch. He was targeted two other times. I mean, that's amazing that somebody that could that soon get out and make an impact like that. So I think it's a feather in the Chiefs cap for, for dealing with that, because that couldn't have been
100%, and I was,
anything but a distraction.
I 100%, and he looked so good early on. I mean, McCaffrey was really impressive, but early on he was giving the Chiefs trouble, and the crowd was really into it every time he entered the game. And I think the Chiefs adjusted a little bit. He might have, they obviously they mentioned how they were preparing for him, but it is when you don't have tape on him with the Niners, it's a little tougher. And but I do think they clearly adjusted, and what was a great win over a good team who I think is they're 3-4, but with McCaffrey in the fold, that's a team that could make some playoff noise.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jeff, it's exciting, right? We're 5-2. Every thought and every in my mind that the Chiefs are gonna beat the Titans, and I don't think you're coming home after a bye week. I mean, come on. I mean, it's everything is playing into the Chiefs' hands to be, 6-2, coming out of a bye week, coming out of this vaunted 8-game schedule that was well documented to being a tough. The toughest first half of the schedule. So I think Chiefs fans should be pretty happy, with where things are going. Knock on wood, with the relative health of the team, where they are, where they're coming, how they're playing, how the offense started to click there against the best defense in the league. And it wasn't like they were the best defense in the league after two games. I mean, they were the best defense in the league after, six games.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like they were, two games in, and who can tell who's going to be the best defense after two games? I mean, it was 7 games. They had 7 games of data, on the Niners, and I just feel really good about this team right now, especially comparatively to where the rest of the AFC is. And boy, isn't everything really just seemingly lining up for another Bills
For
Chiefs rematch?
sales.
It's just going to
Yeah.
be a matter of who gets that home field advantage and where the AFC championship is. So really, I'm excited. I'm excited about this second air quote, second half of the season coming up.
Well, if you enjoy this show presented by Bet Online, please subscribe. We're available on your favorite directories: iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Luminary, and TuneIn. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.